Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Hi.
Dan!
Jordan.
Have you ever been in trouble for being late to work?
Stupid question.
No. I mean, like, not have you been late to work. I mean, like, gotten in big trouble for it.
Yeah, I've been fired for it.
You've been fired for being late to work?
Well, like, habitually.
I thought, like, I'm talking like a one-off thing.
I can't think of any, like, extreme examples, but from my, let's say, 16 to 25-year-old days, like,
yeah,
that stretch
yeah,
of time.
That decade.
I had a lot of jobs. I worked a lot of places, and, yeah, I was not a good employee. I worked hard, but also I hated almost every place I ended up at, except for that movie theater. I loved that.
Yeah.
That was a great stretch.
You loved
of time.
It so much you got hired and fired there multiple times.
Yeah. That was the best job of my life in terms of, like, you know, hourly wages and stuff like that. But I worked at a fucking car wash for a while.
You worked at a car wash?
Yeah. I had a bit about it that was just based on the whole idea of, like, it's nothing like the song. I built a bit just to say that line. So yeah, I used to work at this terrible car wash that my buddy Fox got me a job at. It was so bad. I just got screamed at by people all day.
Do you, like, washing cars?
Yeah, just got screamed at by the coworkers. They were all on coke. It was a terrible, terrible scene.
They were coked up car washers?
Oh yeah, it was horrible.
Is that a thing?
It's horrible. And then you'd get tipped by the people, because I was on the end of it. So, like, there's like three main stations. There's the, like, people at the beginning of it who start the washing.
Right.
Then it goes in where it gets sprayed down and everything like that. And then it comes out and the third station is, like, drying off and polishing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's where I was. And because that is a, like, customer facing position, you know, you hand the car back to the customer, and at that point they give you a tip. And it was always humiliating. Well, a lot of the time, no.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But it's customary to tip at that point.
Oh, okay.
And one time a dude in a suit flicked a quarter at me.
That deserves an ass beating.
I threw it back at him.
Yeah, yeah, like, absolutely.
She's like, how dare you?
Fuck you.
How dare you? It was so bad. That was the worst fucking. I mean, I only worked there for like a month or so, yeah. Maybe even less than that, but it was still a terrible time.
Yeah, what was that guy thinking? Like, a homeless guy would have done this for a quarter. Why did I have to pay for this?
My favorite
thing.
Fuck
that guy.
And this might be too long of a story to tell in our intro for the episode.
No, keep it going.
But one time there was a suspected change thief, you know, stealing change out of people's cars.
Yep, yep.
And everyone who worked there knew that this dude was straight up stealing change. Everyone knew it. He was a creep. He was a weirdo. And so a customer complained about it to the manager, who was one of the people who was doing a ton of coke there.
Right.
And he was like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a sting operation.
We're going to do a sting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he put specific change in a dummy car that went through the car wash.
And there was the paintball explosion that would happen?
No. He had, like, the dates of the quarters and stuff like that all set up. He's like, okay. If this change is missing, we'll look in his pockets, and if those specific coins are in his pocket, we'll know that he stole the change.
That is a great coke idea.
Right. So he goes through with it. Lo and behold, change is gone on the other side.
What?
He demands this kid, like, show what's in his pockets. That change, along with some other changes in there.
Yeah.
But because there's other change in there, he's like, the manager's like, this doesn't prove anything. Just like... I was like,
wait, but he had the change in there.
He did, but he had other change too.
No, but that proved everything.
Could be a coincidence.
It's not possible.
So I was like 17, 18, 19-ish years old, and I was sitting there. I was like, I got to do better than this. I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
So anyway, bad times. I don't know if that was a story about being late necessarily. I was never on time for that job, though. It back.
There we go. It's
anyway,
a full circle.
This is a podcast where I know a lot about Alex Jones.
And I don't know only but what you tell me.
That's correct. Jordan, today we're back in 2009. We have an interesting development to go over here.
What's
on
that?
The show. Well, we all know that on our last 2009 episode, we experienced Alex Jones starting to go hard at George Soros.
Right, because he just found out Princess Di had... Well, died.
Yeah, he's late with the news.
Yeah.
He, demeans Soros in ways that he had never before. He gives him ownership of so many nefarious plots. He brings him up like 50 plus times. It was wild. So now today, that episode covered April 8th. Today we're going over April 9th and 10th, and we'll see what happens with that, see how that thread continues. But before we get to that, got to give a shout out to a couple of new sponsors.
Nice
new
tease.
New donors.
Nice tease.
Listeners out there who are supporting the show, and we appreciate it oh so very much. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to Kevin K. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Next, Tyler. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you very much, Tyler.
Also, Stephanie. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Next, Richard. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Richard.
I'm wondering how many different intonations you can try and put onto. You are mixing it up. Yeah, yeah. No, you're doing great.
And finally, I'd like to say thank you to somebody who joined up and is supporting the show on a little bit of an elevated level. And this is very exciting.
Okay.
I have to say.
All right.
I'd like to say thank you to the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bow, 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 bow. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much, John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Yes, it is. This is a surprising way to learn that we received a MacArthur Genius Grant, but but it is, and apparently they've gotten a lot stingier over the years. But
yeah,
that's fine.
It's a little bit less than other people have gotten. Reggie Watts has gotten.
we got way less advance notice as well. I'll tell you that.
David Foster Wallace got a little more than us from the MacArthurs, but we'll take what we can get.
Hey,
and thank you very much.
We're happy to be associated with those brilliant minds.
If you out there give out genius grants, or you just like what the show is and what we do, you can join up and support the show by going to our website, knowledgefight.com. We have a little button there that says support the show. We would appreciate it, and thank you.
Please do.
So, Jordan, here we are on April 9th.
Yes.
Hot off the heels of Alex Jones taking a pool cue to George Soros.
And we
come in, and on April 9th, Alex Jones starts the show talking about goddamn chemtrails for about the first 40 minutes of the show.
All right.
And I am not interested in
Soros. Soros chemtrails.
Nope. Not a mention of Soros.
Not a mention of Soros.
Not a single mention.
Who's doing the chemtrails?
You know what it is? Remember how I mentioned that on April 8th he went into overdrive and that caller got really like, hey, I support you.
Oh, that was about chemtrails.
You bet.
Gotcha. So now he's got to overcompensate and try and...
I think so. But okay. At the same time, in doing so, on this April 9th episode, he's letting his Soros narrative completely slip, favoring instead to do...
a petty squabble.
Yeah, exactly. Or self-defense against valid criticism from one of his listeners.
Right.
And so he complains about chemtrails in a way that does not do it for me, and I'm not interested in talking about for the first 40 minutes of the episode. But the first clip, we will hear Alex make some incredibly untrue predictions about his future.
The minute July 4th done and the new Obama film's released, I will launch immediately in 2 months... Give myself 3 months because it takes a few weeks to have it mass produced and mastered and shipped. Because this time I had the DVDs come in for Obama deception the day it was released. Or, you know, this actually came in some on the Friday before and then some on the Monday the 16th. And then we had to get caught up. Took us about a week to get caught up shipping. This time, take this next Obama film. We're going to have it done. Let me think. April, May. We're going to have it done the first week of June,
Push it back a little, be mass produced.
We're going to have it a week and a half, 2 weeks before it's even released. And here's a little secret. We're going to have everything packed and ready to ship for people that have purchased it, sitting in there, and we're going to start shipping it 3 days before the official release date. So you literally get it. UPS on average takes 3 days, some places 4 days in the U.S. You will get it on the release date. That's what we're doing. Same thing with this film. As soon as the chemtrail, we don't have time to screw around. Who knows how long there'll be an internet? Who knows how long we're going to be here? They're openly announcing they're getting ready to shut down the web, cut it up, reduce
the whole
it.
Thing.
So we are just intensifying what we're doing on every front, but we don't have the money or the personnel. So fund us by buying the Obama Deception and Endgame and Truth Rising and Fabled Enemies and everything. And
interesting little ad pivot there, but it's an ad pivot towards the products and services that he's offering back in 2009. Interesting. It's very familiar. It has that same feel to it. But what he's talking about there is that, like, he's making the second Obama film.
Yeah.
It's going to be done on the 4th of July, and you will have it on the release date. It does not come out on the 4th of July. It comes out a bit later. But he's also saying the day he's done with the Obama film, he's going to start a new documentary about chemtrails. And I'll say this, that never got made.
That never got made?
No.
I wonder why not.
This next Obama film is the last documentary Alex has ever made.
I believe
that's the case. I'm pretty sure. Because there was that one with Joel Skousen. The interview about strategic relocation.
Yeah, technically
a documentary. Although, Jason Burmis, one of Alex's associates, does end up making a chemtrails film, called, What the Hell Are They Spraying? So maybe Alex was like, good enough. Someone I know made one.
I Know What You Sprayed Last Summer is actually I felt like he was just, have you ever had that, change con pulled on you? Where somebody's like,
wait, go to a car wash?
No, that one's not so much a con as it is a straight up theft. No, the con where they're like, okay, all I've got is $10, so you give me $5. That's not the right change. You give me I'll give you these $4.
They just try and confuse you.
That was what he just did with the release date. He's like, it's going to be out maybe 2 months. Well, the first week of June.
Three days shipping, but also four some places.
But sometimes, and then we'll dial back and there might be another day.
I think he's sincere in his intentions, though. I think he thinks that's going to happen. But none of that happens. It's crazy to hear him, like, have all this, this is what's going to happen, and we know now none of that shit happened. So that was kind of a little bit of an ad pivot, too. But in this next clip that happens almost immediately after, he does what I would describe as, like, a modern-day kind of ad pivot.
I'll just stay home. I'll stay here. I'm not leaving. I think I'm going to set a cot up at this place, and I'm not even leaving. I'm going to hire the people. I'm going to get it done, because we don't have time to wait anymore. Hell is coming down on us. Now, we need your financial support, so please go to, that's how you support us. Go buy the books and videos and info.
The long pause, the now. The intense, expression of like, getting people riled up, long pause, pivot to the ad. That's present day level Alex Jones ad pivot. And we have not seen much of that in this era.
I would say the pause was a little bit long. He's like a foal just learning how to use its legs. Like eventually that is going to turn into, we're all going down. Now what we need to do is have you fund our products instead of him being like, and now I shall give you an ad.
It's interesting to see, but I mean, we have seen sort of shades of it before. So I don't think it means anything in terms of the timeline. I think we're just seeing the evolution of it. We're seeing the salesmanship get better as maybe he directs himself more towards being a sales operation as opposed to pretending to be a journalist of some sort.
Right.
So I think that's kind of interesting, and we'll see where that goes. So in terms of actual narratives, I'm telling you, man, it is 90% chemtrails, and I got no interest in it.
90% chemtrails.
Now, secondly, he has an interview with this guy named Captain Sweeney.
That sounds promising.
Now, I should tell you.
I doubt he's a captain. I don't even think his name is Sweeney.
He is. He's a legit dude.
Oh, okay.
He is a sea captain. so in early April 2009, that's when Captain Phillips got taken by the Somali pirates.
Okay. So he's just got a different captain?
This captain knows the guy who took over the vessel after Captain Phillips got taken by the pirates.
Okay.
So he knows that guy. So
he also knows Kevin Bacon?
He must. It is a straightforward, no-nonsense kind of interview, so we don't need to listen to it.
Really?
I listened to it, and I'm like, huh, this is okay. It's kind of just a conversation about, like, the dangers of sea piracy. And stuff like that. Like, this captain.
That sounds kind of fun.
This Captain Sweeney is kind of trying to make himself part of the story.
Oh.
A little bit.
A little.
A little bit.
He went on InfoWars, yeah. He wants
and
to be part of the
story. Kept talking about how he knows the guy who's there.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm not mad at him. It is what it is. It's a way of presenting the information. And in this instance, I don't think there was anything wild. They're not coming up with crazy narratives about it or anything like that. It's just like, wow, this is an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. Interesting story. Almost no take on it. So we're just going to skip that.
I have a quick question. Not about that.
Better be really fucking quick.
Not about that. He's like a private fisher. He's like a private sea captain.
Yeah, I believe so.
So if you just have a boat, you can call yourself captain. Is that how that works? Like, he's not associated with the military in any way, or the Navy or anything.
He
like
was
that.
In the service.
Was he a captain in the service, though?
I don't know. He's not very clear on that.
I just want to know, if I get a boat, can I just call myself captain and have people announce me as such?
You can, but I also don't think that you can then be contracted to do, like, runs and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So he was actually, like, a licensed, commercial sea captain.
Gotcha.
You know, there is a line.
Okay.
He is above that line.
Okay.
I know that much.
Whatever line there is, that man's a captain.
So after he talks to Sweeney, he gets Tyler Palmer in studio, and that's his Ecola Blue sponsor, the water filtration guy who has a Tatooine school bus filter, school bus size water filter.
We're all going to wish we had him.
And in the middle of them talking about their water filters and how great they are and all that stuff, just doing an infomercial.
Yeah.
Alex remembers that somebody on Air America was talking shit about him. And this tickled me to no end because you're going to be so excited to find out who this is on Air America who's been talking shit about Alex.
Is it Mark Maron?
No.
And again, they don't want you to have guns. They don't want you to be self-sufficient. They don't want you to live in the countryside. They want to take your children, put them on Prozac, have their way with them because they are degenerate
scum. Is it Lionel?
They are rapists. They want to rape your freedom, rape your liberty. By the way, John Harmon, did I send you that clip? In fact, I know I sent it to you last night because I gave you the time code. There's so much cussing in the piece. John at the network, do you have the clip I sent you? The guy saying, rape me?
Uh-oh.
Okay, so the cussing is cut out.
Let's
play part of the raping right now. This is what they put out. Now this is this is their video blog, but their other hosts are saying similar things on shows carried by Air America that I've done nothing to. Now this is what George Soros-funded people have to say about me.
You know what? I wish he was being raped.
It is Mark Maron.
You know what these people's biggest fear is that no one gives a shit about them.
Hey, John, I know you edited it, but can you play the clip? He's playing the clip of me saying, I don't want to be forced to thumb scan to buy and sell. I feel like I'm being raped. I tell the state police and then they arrest me. So you understand he's cutting from that. I'm not going to give the guy's name. I'm not going to give him attention.
It's Mark Maron.
I'm going to give this scum what they want. Yeah, but he's accusing me of making this white supremacist that hated me and was attacking me. The media knew that, lied and said that I made the guy kill the cops. Now they've been forced to retract. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, two separate retractions in articles.
Not really.
Daily Kos has retracted. Raw Stories retracted. Others have retracted. This guy doesn't care. He comes out and calls for me to be raped. For me to be sodomized, basically.
I mean, what the fuck?
This is what this guy would love to have me in a prison camp. And he goes on for 10 minutes. It's the most vicious stuff I've ever heard. And this is the loving liberal. They're so angry we got guns. They're so angry they can't do what Joe Stalin did, that the globalists funded.
Don't call him Joe. Alex is so mad at Mark Maron. Never did I imagine in my wildest dreams that Maron would come up on an episode of Alex Jones.
I don't know. The moment I remembered that, because he brought up Air America one time whenever he was blaming Soros about it. I remember Mark Maron used to work there.
And I want to say that's the only Soros mention on this show.
Okay.
Well, actually, there's two, but they're both in the context of him owning Air America.
Right.
Or running Air America or whatever, which is not accurate. And I would be highly surprised if Maron ever got any George Soros money.
Oh, you don't
considering him and Sam Cedar were doing a show out of the break room at Air America.
No, come on.
So I would say that Alex is a little bit uptight here. He's being a little bit of a snowflake about this.
No. No, he's not a snowflake, Dan. It's all you SJWs who are snowflakes. You're the ones who don't want us to have guns, and that's why you're so angry. And we don't ever get angry at things that you say, but every time we say something...
I think it's a far stretch for Alex to be saying that Maron is calling for him to be raped whenever... What Maron is really saying is essentially, like, this guy is really over-exaggerating his victimhood.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying with that maybe off-color joke a little bit. Or, you know,
it's 2009. You can get away with a lot more.
Mark Maron. It's pre-WTF Mark Maron, who is in a depth of depression and anger.
It's about to be Mark it's about to be WTF with Mark Maron era,
probably because pretty close.
He's about to get fired very shortly.
He's about to start stealing their equipment. So yeah, it's interesting that Alex lacks any context, or it's willful though. He just wants to say that that's what Mark Maron is saying, as opposed to dealing with the like, oh, he's accusing me of exaggerating my victim status,
right,
and what have you. So he's responding to this, and he's got Tyler Palmer just sitting there hanging out.
Yeah.
He's like, I paid for this time to come on and pimp my water filters, and you're just getting mad at this fucking junior varsity guy on Air America. I don't know what's going on here, but Alex decides he's got to break down the entire clip of Maron.
And Tyler Palmer is still just
sitting
there.
He's on hold,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's on hold. He's not sitting there. Okay.
But actually, see, when I heard this come up, I thought it was going to be an angry screed on Maron's part.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be some nonsense, and I wasn't going to be able to come down on either side.
Yeah.
But actually, Mark Maron is incredibly insightful about the people like Alex Jones.
Yeah.
And in this first clip, he basically is trying to express that Alex Jones and his ilk, they fear the idea that they are insignificant. And then Alex proves his point for him.
Now go ahead and play this piece of filth.
You know what? I wish he was being raped there. You know what these people's biggest fear is? Is that no one gives a about them. Their biggest fear is insignificance. Their biggest fear is that they really aren't.
Stop right there. See, they always want to make us feel like we're not important. The people don't have power. We can't affect change. What am I always telling you? You have amazing power. You have incredible power. There are incredible things you can do. You can move mountains.
So that's his overcompensation and his idea that, like, no, Maron wants you to feel insignificant.
Yeah.
No, he wants you, Alex, to feel. He wants you to recognize that you fear the idea of being insignificant.
Yeah.
Not that you actually are, but what motivates you in so much of the defensiveness and victim posturing is the idea without it, you aren't anything. Without the presentation of they're coming to get my guns, what are you?
Exactly.
Nothing. So without the charade, the silhouettes of globalists coming to attack you, you cease to have any purpose. You cease to have any meaning. And Alex proves his point by shifting it onto he's attacking you, my audience, and all that. So that I thought was prescient on Maron's part. But this next clip, I will say, is almost a psychic level prediction that Maron ends up making. When I heard this, I was kind of blown away based on what we know from 2018 and 2019.
You're coming after us, and you then get mad at us when we stand up to you, you little bully. You're not gonna get to rape me, pervert. Do you understand, punk? Go ahead and try it with your SWAT team. You're not getting away with it, cockroach. Now play the punk.
Their biggest fear is that they really aren't that important. Their biggest fear is that no one's going to recognize them.
And pause again. Your biggest fear is you don't get to run things and run our lives, you parasite. Your biggest fear is we're figuring out how much power we got, punk. Go back to him.
These are all distinct and dangerous cries for help from poorly parented who seek to harm and hurt in the name of to make
Hold on, wait a minute, but this guy wants to rape me. Back to him.
Name of to make themselves known to people. They are misguided, and when they are charismatic, like someone like Glenn Beck or somebody like Alex Jones, and they're exploiting the damage of people who live in this world who are desperate, angry, and misguided, that they become dangerous populist leaders. They are the criminals. If the FEMA camps are for anybody, it's for what these people will do when they think the end of the world is here. There is a way to fight this stuff. There is a way to deal
okay,
with
there you go.
People.
That's enough of the punk. I'm going to play.
Of course, cut it off when he starts talking about the solution to your propaganda.
Nobody listen to this next part. Nobody!
Yeah. But that part where he's saying that if FEMA camps are real, they will be what these people use whenever they think the end of the world is coming. What Maron's expressing with the end of the world thing is essentially they will use these sorts of tactics whenever they feel threatened. And that's what you're seeing expressed by their fears of it being done to them when it's not being done to them.
When their fear of being insignificant comes true.
Which, when we now see, or whenever they have the sort of cover to do it.
Yeah.
Which we now see in late 2018 into 2019 with Alex's complete flipping on his position about Rex 84, his opening up to the idea of FEMA camps for immigrants and asylum seekers and stuff like that. Marin was 100% right on. If FEMA camps exist, it's for them to use.
Yep.
It's crazy when I heard that. I was like, oh, god damn.
Yeah, that's solid.
Yeah.
Good work, Marin.
Yep. So.
Time travel high five, I guess.
Yeah.
I hope you go on to do something with
unlock those gates. You were very wise at this point in your career. So, that's interesting. I think that was really about all that I found interesting in this episode, because the rest of it is dog shit.
Mm-hmm.
He sits down with George Humphrey, but Alex even explains at the beginning of the interview, they're like, I'm having George Humphrey come in because we didn't get some stuff we needed for his interview on the documentary. So he's just there to have him say lines.
Yeah.
And it's really terrible. He's talking about how he goes to a coffee shop and a third of them are Democrats, a third are Republicans, and a third are independents, and they're starting
and
to turn on Obama.
And then there's a horse at the bar or
it's like,
something.
What the fuck? How do you take a poll of everybody at this coffee? What are you talking about? It's just complete horseshit.
And how is it so evenly distributed? Where is this? Is this in like the five corners of the state where
nonsense.
You can stand in all the states? What?
And it's such a like precursor to like, you know, Jacob Wall, that dude, he would constantly tweet about being at a coffee shop and overhearing liberals say like, oh, Trump's got some good ideas and stuff like that.
Sure.
It was a sort of, like a formula of a lot of his tweets. And it's interesting to see George Humphrey doing the exact same thing in 2009. It's just, this washed over bullshit about like, hey, I'm out there and I'm hearing unspecific anecdotal people who definitely exist are turning on Obama. Like, all right, man, whatever. Get the fuck out of here.
How about you go predict some trends with your buddy?
Yeah. I don't know if he knows Salenti, to be fair.
Oh, okay.
But then Alex has an interview with Rosalind Peterson, who's a chemtrail, expert lady. I don't care about their interview. It's real stupid. A couple years after this interview, Rosalind did an interview where she said, I literally have no evidence of chemtrails. I have no documents, nothing, just whatever my weird suspicions are.
Oh, so well, that's nice that she's honest about it.
If that's a couple years after this interview, I know that she didn't have any of that 2 years prior or whatever. You know,
maybe she lost it all.
Please.
No. She had it. There was a whirlwind.
As soon as I found that interview from after this that she said, I don't have any evidence of this, I was like, well, we're not listening to your interview with Alex, because it's bullshit. I'm not so interested in this chemtrail nonsense. So we jump off the 9th and we get to the 10th. And this is, to me, one of the most interesting things I've ever experienced on Alex's show.
Okay.
So we saw on the 8th, he's talking about Soros a whole bunch.
The worst.
The 9th, it's almost like he's forgotten that he's supposed to be talking about Soros.
There are a bunch of chemtrails out there.
Barely remembers that he hates him. Just brings him up a couple times when he's complaining about Marc Maron getting paid by him, I guess.
Sure. Not very well by him.
Which, and also the Somali pirate stuff is in play.
Yeah, Captain Sweeney Todd of the Demon Barber.
Sure. So, but on the 9th, the pirate stuff is pretty on above board. It's pretty normal.
Oh, shit. Are we going to get Soros-funded pirates?
No.
Okay, but that would be a great musical.
It could be. But the change that happens on the 10th, you could knock me over with a feather after I heard this.
Whatever you say about the Somalis, ladies and gentlemen, they certainly are bold compared to the gelded, domesticated Westerners.
What?
I mean, they're coming out in ragtag ships to basically do battle with all their different stolen ships, like something out of a Hollywood fantasy movie, something out of Waterworld. They have a battle with the U.S. Navy. These people are unbelievable. And look how they ran off the Delta Force and the Army Rangers in Somalia.
Wow.
He's coming out pro-Somali pirate? That is a controversial stance. I did not hear a lot of that take coming out of Fox News at the time.
That is a crazy pivot. I don't understand.
You gotta give it up to these pirates.
No, you don't.
Listen,
you absolutely
you
don't.
You gotta give it up to the pirates.
No.
Let me tell you something. These terrorists, they're pretty tough dudes too.
Yeah.
They're not bad guys. And those SS agents? You gotta give them.
They had stick-to-itiveness.
Super efficient. You gotta give it that.
So when I heard that, I was like, "Holy shit!" Like, I heard a lot of Alex's like weird positions that he's taken over the years, but pro-Somali pirate.
Look at how they kicked out the Navy Rangers and all those guys. Somali knows what's up.
It was nuts to me, and then I thought, like, okay. That's probably just weird phrasing. It's probably just a straight
Is this whole
thought.
Episode's going to be pro-pirate?
This next clip certainly is.
Did he just watch Hook?
And then some white supremacist, because he is freaked out.
This is in relation to the Pittsburgh shooter that he's still mad
okay.
he's being blamed for.
I was like, there are Somali pirates fighting white supremacist pirates?
No, this is
I would love that musical.
This is him just being self-defensive about the gotcha. Pittsburgh shooting and the relation to him.
Knowing they're coming for guns, and because he's living with mommy and lost his job and freaked out. That's 90% of it, but 10% of it is because he knows they're coming for guns. He's just sick of life and sick of it all.
So real quick, you can even hear in there that he is defending the Pittsburgh shooter because he
yeah.
says he knows they're coming for the
yeah.
guns, not that he was acting out of a paranoia that Alex had instilled in him
oh.
through his constant exposure to these narratives. So he knows that they're coming for the guns. It's something we already covered when we talked about this more in depth. Alex is dealing with this as like, it was a rational decision to kill
yeah,
those cops.
For sure.
He knows
you
they're
gotta.
Coming for the guns. You gotta kill them. So that's fucked up.
I don't understand why he thinks a defense of his shit is like, no, I didn't make that guy kill that guy. I made him 1/10 kill that guy instead of 9/10 kill him.
Right.
Like, it's only 1/10 my fault.
It's a strange position.
That still means you're involved.
Yeah. So that's bad. That's bad.
Yeah.
Certainly. But where this clip goes.
Lost his job and freaked out. That's 90% of it, but 10% of it is because he knows they're coming for guns. He's just sick of life and sick of it all. So he, just like the Somalis that have nothing to live for,
what?
He goes ahead and starts killing. You got to be desperate and hardcore to be the Somali pirates steaming out to face down the U.S. Navy and fighter bombers, waving AK-47s in the air, ready to die. And they're like, hey, we're men. We're ready to fight you. Let's go.
So he's a good guy then?
I don't like what they're doing, but you got to admire them.
What? Do you? I really don't think you
do. You know,
do.
American women want a castrated male on Prozac wearing a flower outfit. Of course, they really don't want that, so they're never satisfied. Those Somali women are out there waiting for the pirates to come back, just begging for them. You know, of course, it's primitive, but it's what humans are. And we've gotten away from what we are.
Okay, so he drifts into deeply MRA kind of territory there. But that is a fucked up, like, train of thought.
So then is he saying that the way we are is supposed to be like the Somali pirates?
Yes, essentially, or at least women are supposed to be that way. At least that tracks with his thought.
Wow.
So if you diagram that sentence, he's saying that, like, okay, so this Pittsburgh shooter was rational because he knew that they were coming for the guns.
And, right.
You know, that was a big part of what he did. And, you know, he's just like these Somali pirates. They're desperate and they need to, you know, fight back.
Nothing to lose.
Then he goes on to say positive things about the Somali pirates.
They're great.
Maybe I don't like what they're doing, but you gotta admire them.
You gotta admire them.
Which is, to me, a net positive statement. Just because you're giving lip service to not liking piracy doesn't mean that you're not saying good things about these pirates.
I don't like the targets they're choosing, Dan. I love the way they do it. They got a verb. They got a flair.
Because he's saying these positive things about the Somali pirates after comparing them to the Pittsburgh shooter, it's kind of how language works that he's saying positive things about the Pittsburgh shooter.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so
especially,
crazy.
Especially considers he starts it with his classic denigrating the Pittsburgh shooter's maleness. Oh,
yeah.
He's alone. He's fat. He lives in his mom's basement.
Yeah.
And then he's so desperate. And yeah, 10% of him knows that the cops are coming for his guns. So now he's desperate, just like these awesome, badass Somali pirates.
Hardcore.
Running around, getting shit done.
Yep.
I love Somali pirates. And that is what this Pittsburgh guy is just like. I said that I love the white supremacist shooter, didn't I?
Oops.
Shit.
Damn it.
I gotta undo, can I redo that sentence?
So.
I love pirates.
At the end there too, Alex isn't taking into account like possible other variables that explain why women are flocking to these pirates. They make a fuck ton of money.
Do they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sweet.
Most of the ransoms are paid, like, at this period of time. Like,
right.
They, you know, they take over a bunch
yeah.
of boats, and because insurance stuff and all that and the difficulties of trying to get the boats back by fighting and stuff like that, most of the ransoms are paid off. And so these Somali pirates make tons of, or at the time at least, before
right.
the problem was taken more seriously,
right.
they made tons of money. So the women flocking to them is more a function of a economically depressed Somalia where there is a outlaw business where people are very, very successful.
Right.
I think that it might have more to do with that as opposed to being attracted to pirates for their guns and masculinity.
So you're saying that these women who are with men in like the Mexican cartels, they aren't attracted to the brutal, vicious nature of their business and their psychopathy, but instead they're attracted to the large sums of money that these guys get? I don't understand at all.
I think we drift...
As I know women and the way we are supposed to be.
I think we drift too much into sort of misogynistic ideas if we say either, really. You know, like whether you're attracted to the brutality or whether you're attracted to the money. But I don't think it's necessarily in any way offensive to say it's a incredibly impoverished country.
Yeah.
These are people who have some sort of an ability to provide a secure situation for you with the economic... things at their disposal, and it does make sense that people would see them as more attractive partners than someone who is a broke fisherman or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, just from a socioeconomic standpoint.
I was just drawing a parallel. I don't really know or presume.
Yeah.
Sure. Fuck them. I don't care.
I'm just saying that Alex is, you know, this is real men's rightsy, real chauvinist.
Oh yeah, this is incredibly misogynistic. Yes.
Coming out, which is so weird. It starts with defending the Pittsburgh shooter, praising the Somali pirates, drifting into misogyny. It's just, I don't know what's happening, man.
He just does. It's his subconscious doing everything possible to say out loud what he really feels, which is like, yeah, I loved that Pittsburgh shooter. That dude was dope. But he has to let his brain, he's fighting viciously to keep the real part of him inside, and it's not going great.
That guy got it.
That guy, and yeah, 10% of him knew that they were coming for his guns. And if you know they're coming for your guns, that justifies your behavior. Just like the Somali pirates, who are great. I love Somali pirates. I don't love white supremacist shooters, but they are a lot like Somali pirates, whom I do love. You can draw your own conclusions there. That's no big deal.
So, you know, the Pittsburgh shooter was motivated by these ideas that they're coming for your guns. And what do you know? Alex reinforces exactly that idea.
Point here is they are coming for our guns. And let me give the government a newsflash. Your propaganda doesn't work anymore. That's why they're selling over 1 million guns a month.
To the Somalis.
The instant check is over 1,200,000+ purchases a month. You got it? It's more than doubled. We know what you're up to, and you're cruising for a bruising.
Whoa, cruising for a bruising. The idea that tons of people are buying guns isn't evidence that the government's propaganda is not working. It's evidence that Alex's is.
Hmm.
The idea that the government is trying to put out anti-gun propaganda and then it not working is evidenced by gun sales doesn't make sense. But the idea that Alex is saying they're going to take your guns, you should get more... and people do buy guns, that is evidence that the propaganda is working. So Alex is looking at this backwards and sideways and wrong.
Yeah.
So
pretty much all across the board.
But the reason he's doing it is in order to reinforce those same narratives that led the Pittsburgh shooter down the path that ended up in him murdering police officers. So that's real cool. I like that. I say facetiously. So I told you we're not going to talk much about chemtrails.
Yeah.
But Alex does bring up one thing that we've talked about in the past, and I just thought it would be fun to make sure that everyone understands that some of Alex Jones's misunderstandings and inability to read have been consistent through the last decade.
And then they say, oh, well, we're just testing looking at doing it. You know, again, it's all lawyer terms. The testing.
Or as other people call them, terms.
It is lawyer terms. They say, just testing it right now, testing the terraforming technology with all these giant... No, see, that's the legalese. It's like U.S. Code, Title 50, Chapter 32, Subsection 1528, Paragraph B, states, oh, we can't do any chemical, biological, or radiological testing on the American people or the military without their consent.
Actually, it doesn't say anything about consent, and he's talking about paragraph A. It's actually the stuff about the prohibited activities. But go ahead, Alex.
Petty.
And so every time I source that, the people go, look, Alex, it says the opposite. It says right here they can't do it. Until you read below it the exceptions for any research purposes, any humanitarian purposes, any law enforcement purposes. It's the exemption! So, of course, they call it research.
We've talked about this before, but just because it bears bringing up how consistent his stupidity is. Yes, there are these exceptions in paragraph B, but the exceptions begin subject to subsection C, D, and E. The prohibition in subsection A does not apply to a test or experiment carried out for the following purposes. Subsection C says the Secretary of Defense may conduct a test or experiment described in subsection B only if informed consent to the testing was obtained from each human subject in advance of the testing on that subject. So the exceptions are actually enclosed within the consent thing.
Yeah.
These are not exceptions to consent. The consent is imposed upon the exceptions. So Alex just doesn't know how to read. This is infuriating. He's a very big dum-dum.
Yes.
So
I agree.
Yeah. I just, you know, I like to bring that up every now and again. It's been a long time. He brought it up on the Rogan episode that he was on, and
yeah,
we talked about it like a year and a half ago or something. We have to re-up a little bit.
Let's just make sure that... Just because you can say a lot of words in a row,
right,
and they do, in fact, correlate to a paragraph somewhere,
uh-huh,
does not mean that those words correlate to the paragraph to which you are thinking.
Or that the meaning is anything close to what you're describing it as being.
Exactly.
So, I mean, we got through that. And now guess what?
Soros.
Pirates are back.
Pirates are back!
And so here come the pirates. The pirates are now preparing to engage the U.S. Navy.
What?
See, they're the complete opposite of what we've become.
Yeah. Yep.
Good.
The pirates.
I mean, you can't help but admire them.
Yes, you can. You can help it.
I'll tell you,
though,
I've watched the films of the Somalis fighting. It's just devilish. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It is devilish. Because they're ready to die. And unlike, on average, you know, the stereotype of Arabs not being trained to shoot and being emotional and not aiming, the Somalis aim.
Uh-oh.
Because they're Africans, they're not Arabs. It's devilish. But then you've got the opposite. You got us, American men with big tats all over them, strutting around, no fear, bugging their eyes out, the little guy at the supermarket. But these big boys see a cop, they start urinating down their leg.
That's you,
and
Alex.
You won't fight for your own country. You're cowards. You're cowards.
Holy shit. He's calling his own militia people cowards and stuff because they're not like Somali pirates. This is crazy.
I don't understand why any of this is happening.
Neither do I.
Because
I scrambled on this. I was like, okay. Is this an indication of something that means more than we realize? Like, is there some world power that was aligned with the Somali pirates that maybe Alex is being swayed by? No one was
no
on
way.
Board.
No way. Nobody's on board with Somali pirates.
Nope.
They're literally pirates. They're only on board with themselves.
Russia
even
was even bombing them.
Yeah. Somali pirates aren't on board with other Somali pirates. They're pirates.
Yeah. It was almost one of the most, it was probably the most universally, opposed,
everybody
groups.
He's watching videos of Somali pirates fight?
I don't fucking know what he's doing.
Where is he getting these videos?
I think he's just making stuff up. That's what I think.
And they're devilish? Mm. Oh boy.
So I think,
somebody put him on a ship.
Alex seems to be fundamentally misunderstood about what the Somali pirates were doing. Prior to this episode being recorded, and later on, too, people from the New York Times and The Guardian, among other publications, did interviews with actual Somali pirates, and to a man, they all made it very clear that their only motivation was money. They were committing these crimes just to extort the ransom money from the ships. There was no grander political statement behind it. They weren't trying to wage war with the ships or any government, and weren't fighting for freedom. It was just a criminal racket. That's all it was. And this is super interesting, because what Alex has done in his head is transform this mafia activity into something grander, something that fits his fantasies about what he'd like to see his militia community engage in if they weren't so cowardly. But that's all it is. It's just his fantasies. Now, it should be noted that there were side benefits to the pirates' activities, but they certainly weren't the primary reason they committed their crimes. Because they scared off a ton of fishing boat traffic, local fishermen were able to boost their yields, which was a real help to local economies. Additionally, the ransom money the pirates received was infused into local communities, which in turn began to help them flourish. None of this excuses sea piracy, and none of it was the reason that they got into privateering in the first place.
Yeah, but you gotta give it up to them.
It's an interesting historical piece.
That, yeah.
But it's what you would expect, because there's inflows of money. It has to be spent somewhere.
Right.
And if these people are in these communities, that money is going to be spent there. It's interesting. It's not exculpatory or excusing them in any way.
Whenever you have a economically depressed region that is depressed economically by a let's call it exploitative behavior from others, and then part of that economically depressed region is like, holy shit, what if we just started stealing our shit back?
I mean, a lot of it isn't their shit that they're stealing, though. It's like, a lot of it
is aid. I meant metaphorically.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
A lot of it they end up taking hostage is like aid that's supposed to go to these countries and stuff like that.
Right.
So it is.
I'm not saying they're fighting the good fight.
I understand.
Specifically, I am not saying you have to give it up to them.
Right.
I'm specifically not saying that they're pirates.
Yeah.
You do not have to give it up to them.
Yeah.
Not at all.
It's just more complicated than the black and white picture that Alex is presenting. Although his version is like, it's the good side of black or white, which is weird.
Sure.
So also Alex, throughout these statements that he's making about these Somali pirates, he seems to think that they're the same people who fought the U.S. in Mogadishu in 93, but that's absurd. Mogadishu is on the south coast of Somalia, whereas the piracy was mostly surrounding the Gulf of Aden, which is between the northern coast of Somalia and Yemen, and it's also 16 years later at this point. I mean, sure, there may have been some overlap, like a couple of the pirates were veterans of, that took down that Black Hawk helicopter.
Sure.
What have you.
Sure.
But it's crazy to think that it's mostly the same personnel or anything like that, and he seems to be conflating those two things in his mind, because the Mogadishu is an embarrassment for the UN.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a possibility that he thinks that these are the same Somalians who
are getting one up on the UN all over again.
Maybe I think that that's the only theory I can come up with, but that's not good enough.
Like
for
there's
this.
There's a young army officer who is who took down the Black Hawk, and he grew up, and this is what 16 years later. So now he's grizzled. Let's say he's going to be played by Sean Connery.
Okay.
Why not?
He's got range.
He's amazing. Ben Kingsley played Gandhi. This is exactly the same casting choice.
Tom Hanks will play Captain Phillips.
So he's like, you know what? We got to get the band back together one more time and start our own piracy business.
Okay.
Kind of build it up
to the North Coast
to be pretty successful for a while.
Sure.
Attract enough attention that people finally crack down on us and straight up murder us.
Now, I want
that's the plan?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Just because I said that most of it was surrounding the Gulf of Aden, that doesn't mean that all of it was. Just to be clear. But that was the most hot spots and stuff. And so geographically, it's kind of weird to assume. I just think that Alex is I don't know what he's thinking, but if I had to come up with a theory, that's kind of what I would say.
Yeah.
The association with embarrassment of the UN and stuff like that, but it doesn't merit this, man. It doesn't.
I think I'm going to really simplify it and just say Alex likes outlaw assholes who kill people.
I don't think you're wrong. And so he has Captain Sweeney on again the next day, and here's how he introduces him. I think this is tasteless.
Good to have you here with us, Captain Sweeney.
Thank you, Alex. It's great being with you.
Okay, give us the latest. I mean, these Somalis are amazing.
What?
This is so weird.
It's so
this
weird.
Is so weird. What is he doing?
I don't know. It's the craziest thing I think I've ever seen.
He's just gradually talking himself more and more into these pirates. Not just that you have to give it up to them. Now we're at.
They're amazing.
These dudes are amazing.
They're amazing. They're not like us cowardly U.S. militia people.
Dreamy.
Because I think that he thinks that they're locked in some sort of nationalist struggle against the globalist aid boats or something like that. When it's an extortion racket.
Are they the ones behind chemtrails too?
Totally.
Okay, that sounds right.
I'm baffled by it. But this next clip.
If the chemtrails were Somali, he'd be like, you gotta give it up to these chemtrails.
This next clip, I think, brings it into a little bit more focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting because, Alex kind of advocates a war crime in this next clip. But the way he's presenting it is very strange.
Well, the real attacks happen. This isn't Al-Qaeda made up. This is real.
So that's the first part that I think is really weird. I think another reason that he is respecting them is he thinks that they're real terrorists
as opposed to 9/11, which was staged.
All of these fake terrorists out there and stuff like that. So I think that he thinks that they're a noble enemy for him to fight against. And therefore, you gotta give it to him, but I'm still going to fight you.
A great warrior can only be killed by a greater warrior. Anything else would be...
I think that's a piece of this which is really, really fucked up.
That is fucked
not,
up.
Is not, reflective of reality at all.
No.
So here's where he advocates a war crime.
And you just give him... You give them 12 hours to get out of the ports, and you destroy Somalia's ports. Do you think that's a bad idea?
Well, I think personally what I would like to see first, I would like to see the restriction on merchant vessels having weapons be taken off and have it be a requirement that they have either armed guards on board or trained crews with weapons on board through high-risk areas.
I would also like to see
some kind of mechanism for trying the pirates, because this is also bogus.
Privateers.
You know, the U.S. Navy a few weeks ago had to hand because they didn't know what to do with them. It was like catch and release. So they were like, now what are we going to do with
this? I know, criminals, just like the illegal aliens, can rob banks and they let them go. Captain, you disagree with targeted smart bombs, with satellites know where the pirates are based, blowing up all their bases?
Right now, yes, and I'll tell you why. Because Vietnam. I have a lot of friends who were in Vietnam, and I was in the Army just after that, but told me we had a heck of a time deciding who was the good guys.
This is like not going to Hanoi. This is like not going downtown. No, I'm saying hit their bases.
Yeah, we could have not done that.
I would say if they do that, the floating bases. But even then, a few weeks ago, the Indian Navy
grabbed a wrong ship,
a suspected mothership, and then it turned out to be a Thai fishing vessel. And they killed all 14 crew members on there. I think personally that we need to have a defensive posture.
So I think Captain Sweeney is fairly right there, and especially the part about you're going to end up killing people who aren't the pirates, which is evidenced by what happened recently. And Alex's response to that is he knows about that. When Captain Sweeney brings up that Indian Navy taking out this Thai fishing boat,
the wrong ship,
Alex, before Sweeney even says it, Alex knows what story he's going to bring up, which means that Alex is aware that if you do just indiscriminately go bomb all these places, you're going to end up killing tons of people who are the wrong people, and he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, well, you're bumming him out. Stop saying stuff like that.
It is a bummer.
You stop saying so. You could see how deflated it was. Oh, so you don't think we should kill all of them? Well, they just killed a bunch of innocents. Bring that up. Come on.
It's so.
You don't want to kill everybody.
It's so weird.
No, all I'm saying
I can't figure out his position.
Take a main economic port where not just illegal activity occurs, but many regular activity, and just blow it the fuck up and destroy the area.
Yeah, I mean, get rid of all of their whatever fishing community does exist there, whatever economy is based on that there. Get rid of that entirely.
Yeah.
Kill a lot of people who are just there.
Did they plant any crops?
Mm-mm,
You know what? The Somali pirates need to eat, so you should destroy all food sources around the area as well. That way the Somali pirates
totally.
Just all starve to death.
Yeah, that's a good, plan.
Yeah. No,
he's advocating.
That is a war crime.
He's advocating something that would have horrible repercussions. And I can't imagine he hasn't thought that through. Maybe he hasn't, I don't know. But I just can't figure out his Somali pirate narrative. It's so complicated. Because on the 9th, it wasn't weird. In his interview with Sweeney, it wasn't weird. He wasn't saying positive things about the Somali pirates. And then on the 10th, he's like, gotta give it to them. They're amazing.
It does kind of sound like also what he did was on the 9th, started talking about Somali pirates and kind of got a little excited. And then spent the rest of the night like watching YouTube clips and all of this shit.
That's a very possible theory.
And that's why he knows immediately, like, oh yeah, they grabbed the wrong ship. I saw that last night. I was watching a shit ton of YouTube clips in between the chemtrail shit. And I'm telling you, you gotta give it up to the Somalis.
It's very possible that that's exactly what happened. But whatever the case, I mean, this plays out over like the next ways. Like Captain Phillips was held for a while. So we'll see if Alex's narrative about the Somali pirates evolves, but this is where we jump off it today.
When are they going to kill Captain Phillips? I thought I used to respect these Somali pirates, but my first move would have been jump ship.
I honestly wonder if he'll be mad that snipers took out some of those pirates to free Captain Phillips.
Yeah, well, that's because it's a dishonorable way of doing it.
I wonder if that will be his approach.
As we all know, they should have pulled out swords and clashed blades.
What if that is his angle?
I bet it is.
I can't wait to find
out. So cowardly to shoot a man from distance. You look him in the eyes, Dan.
Such a weird thing. You never expect. Alex never gives you what you expect. You like, on some level, you expect the Soros shit to continue. It fucking doesn't. And he then is like, Somali pirates are great. Don't know what to do anymore. He's so confusing. But at least it brings me some joy to look at. Like, it really does. That's the kind of Alex that that tickles me.
Yeah.
That unexpected, out of left field support of terrorist pirates.
Yeah. Awesome. I don't know what else to say other than it's like his ability to support and love white supremacists is restricted because when they kill people, it's bad.
Right.
So he just transfers that over to Somali pirates because they're romanticized murderers. All good.
Could be some of that.
He's an idiot.
Anyway, so we're done with the Somali pirates. And in this next clip, Alex complains more about.
I got to give it up to you for that segment on the Somali pirates.
Thank you.
You just gotta give it up to the Somalis.
That's okay. So, now Alex is gonna complain more about the Pittsburgh shooting stuff. And he's going to blame the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL for feeding his name to the media. But this clip is 46 seconds long. In the beginning of the clip, he's going to blame them for doing that. And by the end of the clip, he's going to admit he has no idea if they did that.
Okay.
This is quintessential Alex Jones right here.
Good work.
If you need a soundbite of how Alex Jones operates, this is it.
And they're saying that I made this white supremacist kill three cops and shoot two others when it's admitted it was a domestic dispute.
It always
with his
is.
Mommy kicking him out. And it turns out the guy didn't like me and attacked me all over the web. So, and they knew that. So the issue here is that must mean we're really getting to him. Within hours of these cops being killed, the Southern Poverty Law Center fed my name into the newspapers. And then, of course, it turned out it was all a complete frame-up and a lie. We know the Southern Poverty Law Center and ADL have been caught on record. I mean, I have the mainstream news stories from the 80s and 90s creating and leading fake Nazi groups and trying to get violence. I don't know if they're involved in this, but more and more, that needs to be investigated and looked into.
He made a direct accusation that the Southern Poverty Law Center fed his name to the media to associate with this shooting.
I don't know if they did that, though.
That's crazy. You can't do that.
They did that.
You can't do that.
I don't know if they did it.
You can't do that.
They did that.
You can't do that.
I don't know if they did.
You can't do that at the same time that you're saying, like, I have all this on record, everything is, you know, like, that invalidates every single time you say, I know this. Because you
don't. Well, I don't know it.
I don't know. Yeah.
But they did it.
I don't know. So
I can't tell you they did.
I think that's just a perfect like distillation of Alex to a T. I know it, but I don't know if it's true. We should look into it.
That'd be fun if that was the standard everybody was held to.
Oh man.
Right? We could say all kinds of shit.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Do you know who is driving listeners to our podcast?
Who's that?
The MacArthur Foundation.
Probably. So now Alex has another guest on after this. And it's not great, the situation we find ourselves in. Oh, I should also tell you, he had Bob Chapman on, but it was a meandering, nonsensical interview. So,
yeah.
And they don't do any of their weird gold thing.
They don't do their two-man game?
No.
That's disappointing.
I don't know exactly why. I think Alex was pressed for time because of the interview with Sweeney about the developing Somali pirate situation. So him and Bob does do like a weird, crazy ad pivot to try and sell all of Alex's stuff that does include the gold and silver. And so there is a little bit of the sales stuff, but it's not the same pure Alex uses Bob as a setup to bring in Ted.
Yeah, you would think that if he had pirates on the brain, he would want to talk nonstop about gold.
Doubloons.
Yeah.
Kruberans.
Think about it. Think about all the gold those pirates are finding.
Yeah. So after
you got to give it up for those Somali pirates and their economic choices.
You got to.
Yeah.
So after that, Alex has another guest on, and this is a really interesting guest to have on because he's not an idiot.
Okay.
We were taken with it as well, and that's why we're going to go to Mr. Black right now. Mr. Black, good to have you on with us.
Thank you.
Okay, you got the floor for the rest of the hour, and I don't want to take much more time than that because I want you to be able to complete the interview that you've been gracious enough to do with us there in your offices.
So the interview he's talking about in his offices
is also going to be in the documentary.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, there you go.
So this is a weird situation for us to be in because Alex has accidentally found himself a credible guest.
Oh, no.
William Black.
He's fucked.
William Black is a professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and has a deep resume in the world of finance. He played a major role in mitigating the damage that was done during the SNL crisis, which, as he explains, he did by working against very harsh opposition to re-regulate the savings and loan market.
I thought that was when they hired Janine Garofalo.
Mm-mm. Oh, I got it. Dick Ebersol. I have to assume Black has no idea who Alex Jones is. I can come to no other conclusion as to why he agreed to come on, because as we will find out shortly, he doesn't agree with Alex at all. So here's the first clip where they're having a discussion about how the banks are a bunch of frauds.
Oh,
and all that.
I agree.
Lending institutions are out of control.
Federal Reserve.
No, that doesn't come up really because Black is not an anti-Federal Reserve guy.
Yeah.
But he is a guy who is very against these lending institutions using corrupt means in order to do the exact same things that led to the 2008 crisis.
Right.
So they have both the same sort of idea about what the problem is, but
yes,
their views on it are very different. So they've been talking in circles a little bit. Alex is using some of his talking points and Black's responding to them just with, you know, scholarly aplomb, mm-hmm, and what have you. And then they get to the idea that what is going on is socialism somehow.
Isn't this is the opposite of socialism. This isn't them helicoptering money down on the people. This is helicoptering money to the offshore banks.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted precedence, it would be closest to national socialism.
I guess where they call it socialism, but really just give it all to the inner party?
Yeah, it's a fascist arrangement.
And then they call it socialist.
Right. Well, you know, the Nazi Party called themselves National Socialists. I'm not comparing either of these to Nazis. I don't think that's, you know, that misuse of the phrase strikes me as really diminishing what Nazis were all about.
But the economic system is similar.
But the economic system is, I think the best way to describe it is crony capitalism.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible system. Anybody who's ever lived in a nation like that doesn't want to be there.
Play them off.
Unless, of course, they're the crony capitalists.
Okay, exactly. It's good for them, nobody else. Let's come back and talk about who's at fault, how we bring them to justice so that we can stop them, because they control the political system now. If we don't stop them somehow, as you said, it's going to lead to Weimar Republic or, I guess, Zimbabwe.
He already, earlier in the interview, Alex tried to characterize the hyperinflation that he's afraid of leading to the Weimar Republic, uh-huh, style hyperinflation, and Black disagreed with him. So Alex is even just misrepresenting that there. But two important things there. Start that music cue right after he says crony capitalism.
Yep.
Because that means one thing to Black and something else to Alex. But he got the sound bite he needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to move along. We got it. That's great. Second thing, Alex in that clip very clearly demonstrates that he is aware that the National Socialists just called themselves socialists, that they weren't actually socialists.
Yeah.
So every time he tries to present the idea that Hitler was into socialism and stuff like that, go fuck yourself.
It's you're on purpose.
There's a level of, like, he's, you know, in improv, or like if you're, I guess in improv, you're playing a character in a scene. You have to adjust your level of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would your character be aware of X, Y, or Z? Like, if you're playing some sort of, like, backwoods character, he shouldn't know about Noam Chomsky.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Even if you do as the actor.
Right.
Alex is fucking up his intelligence here. He's fucking up what he should be aware of. According to how he presents himself in his worldview, he shouldn't have the awareness that Nazis just called themselves socialists.
Yeah, that's true.
He's fucking up the improv game here a little bit. I think it's probably partially because he's excited that William Black is saying a lot of things that sort of fall in line with his descriptions of the market.
Right, right, right. They're using the same words. Alex is going to use them his way.
Right, right.
Whereas Black is going, God, I wish he had said to Black, like, so how do you feel about the Federal Reserve being voted on by three congressmen?
I gotta go. So like I said, they don't agree on pretty much anything, really, at the when you get down to the core of it. But that's not entirely fair. They agree about the description of the problem, namely that the banks and lending institutions were to blame for the 2008 financial crisis. But I think almost everyone agrees about that, save for the politicians who rely on donations from those sectors to fill their coffers. So they agree on the description, but if you take a look at Black in his public statements, you'll see that he's not at all on the same page as Alex in terms of prescriptions. One small caveat, though, they are in agreement that they need to put people responsible for the crisis on trial, and if necessary, send them to prison. Alex probably is less interested in the trials part. He seems to call for summarily locking up bankers quite a bit, but the two guys definitely are on the side of these people need to face consequences. But again, I think almost everybody who's not biased about the subject agrees on that, too.
I think even the banks themselves agree that they caused the problem. They just don't care.
Right. Or they wouldn't be, they would be reticent to admit it or publicly acknowledge it. So where do they differ? Here's one piece of information that should tell you just about everything you need to know. In the 2016 election, William Black served as an official economic advisor for the Bernie Sanders campaign. The same Bernie Sanders that Alex does a killer impression of. The same Bernie Sanders who Alex believes advocates economic positions that will lead the U.S. to collapse and becoming a totalitarian hellhole.
Yes.
William Black is Bernie Sanders' economic advisor. Crazy. William Black's a pretty far-left dude, especially from an economic perspective. His testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee regarding the financial crisis could not be more clear in its point that the crisis was a failure brought on by deregulation and not enforcing the regulations that do exist strongly enough. In his Senate testimony, he explains that the repeal of Glass-Steagall was a big deal, but on the ground level, what was worse was how the Clinton administration, quote, implemented the Reinventing Government Initiative, which was hostile to regulation and enforcement. We were instructed, pursuant to that initiative, to refer to and think of the industry as our clients. That's a mindset that destroys effective supervision. He goes on to spell it out, saying, quote, the three Ds, deregulation, desupervision, and de facto decriminalization, returned with a vengeance in 1993 and expanded over the next 15 years. Quote, the most difficult aspect of the current crisis to contain was that roughly 80% of non-prime loans were made by entities not subject to a direct federal regulation, primarily mortgage bankers. All the regulators needed to do to prevent the crisis was ban lending practices that were rational only for control frauds engaged in looting. The regulators consistently refused to do so because of their anti-regulatory ideology. He goes on to say, quote, effective financial regulatory cops on the beat are essential to our ability to prosecute elite white-collar criminals. Though economics is very complicated as a game, Black's argument is very simple. There are tons of institutions that were engaged in what he calls control fraud, which is an idea that he pioneered, which is the idea that these they take their institution and control it as an instrument of fraud. The chief way that this fraud was done was in the form of stated income loans, or what the industry calls liar's loans, where the lender knows that the recipient of the loan doesn't have the ability to repay the loan and assists them in lying about their income. According to Black's testimony, the incidence of fraud in stated income loans was nearly 90%.
That's a lot.
Yes. So it's more complicated than this, but his basic point was that any institution that's engaged in stated income loans is pretty clearly doing so to commit a fraud and should be on everyone's radar. Because of deregulation and deprioritization of this form of crime in the late 90s and onward, the regulators were hamstrung in terms of dealing with this, which led to what amounted to a decriminalization of control fraud in the large financial institutions. In that environment, there's no incentive to play by the rules, and doing so is actually a great disadvantage, which increases the likelihood that the behavior will become endemic. The problems that William Black saw in the financial world were all things that he felt would be taken care of with regulation and regulatory follow-up, which Alex would not be in favor of. He also advocated for tying professional compensation to a firm's, quote, demonstrated long-term performance, which is something Alex might be in agreement with, unless the John Birch Society president is in the room at the time.
Okay, so his advice is instead of paying mortgage bankers a shit ton for doing something immediately and then dumping on it later,
right,
we should tie their income to long-term performance growth.
Yeah.
That sounds like a terrible idea, Dan.
It's a bit more complicated than that, but that's what it really boils down to in terms of what his positions were.
And
there
he's
were these
describing
fraudulent
regulatory
systems.
Capture as well, where the regulators were treating the people they were supposed to be watching over as their client,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to being
because
like,
of things,
hey,
Because of things that were done during the Clinton years.
Yeah.
And he also makes a very salient point about the idea of needing to look at these situations outside of the context of politics.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of, like, trying to blame some administration for X or Y or Z is foolish, because you just need to deal with the problem as the problem.
Right.
And the problem is these institutions taking their ability to turn themselves into instruments of fraud. That's the big deal. And the way that they do that, chiefly, or at least in this instance, was through these liars' loans, these stated income loans.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the other thing is that they've done research into this. These stated income loans that he's talking about, which 90% of which were fraudulent, they were fraudulent at the direction of the lender, not the lendee.
Yeah.
It wasn't, it was massively more prevalent for the person giving out the loan to coerce or be like, you should lie about your income and your ability to pay back this loan, because they were lying about the security of these loans.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so there was just this incentive to create a blossoming
shit. That's your net income. I want your gross income. Well, you're not going to be approved for this loan if you give this as your gross income. But if you give just a little bit more as your gross income, they're going to approve you for this loan.
Right.
Why wouldn't you do it? You deserve to get this. I need you to get this loan.
I don't know exactly the words they'd use, but it probably felt like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I read over his Senate testimony for the Judiciary Committee, and that's a pretty fine distillation of a lot of what he's advocating for. A lot of it comes down to regulatory failure and a need for stronger regulations and enforcement of those regulations. So I don't think Alex knows what he is into. I don't know if Alex knows what William Black is about outside of having seen him do an interview with Bill Moyers, mm-hmm. where he talks about how the financial system is corrupt. And Alex probably just took the surface level things that he agreed with him about and assumed he must believe all the globalist stuff and all that other nonsense.
That's a dangerous assumption.
And then William Black's like, I'll come talk to you. I'll come on your show. Doesn't know who he is. Doesn't know what way he's being used in. It's super interesting. I'm excited to see what that interview for the documentary turns out being like.
Yeah.
Because maybe he will have figured it out by then. I don't know.
Well, does he... So you've listened to this whole interview.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the way that Alex is talking so far, from what I've heard and can gather from their like, tones of voice and whatnot, Alex probably does know more about him than just like a surface level belief in his globalist stuff, just because he's clearly trying to get his sound bites. He is not trying to engage in an actual discussion.
I think Alex knows his resume and that he's a credible dude.
Right.
I think that's what he knows. I don't think he's read any of his writings. I don't think he's read like what he was like specifically involved in during the SNL crisis. Like I really don't think he does, because if he does, or if he did know those things, well, I guess it wouldn't serve his interests at all to debate him, because William Black's much smarter than him.
Oh, he'd get his ass kicked.
So maybe he is just trying to exploit him. It's exploitative no matter what, but it's hard to tell if it's like an exploitation that's born out of ignorance or malice.
Right.
I'm not sure. Or
right,
not
right,
malice,
right.
Ill will. I don't know.
Bad faith.
Sure. There you go. Yeah, it's hard to tell. I'm not sure. But, you know, it's a fine interview as far as it goes. It never gets hostile or anything like that. There's just a number of points where Black has to sort of clarify positions and stuff like that, because Alex is sort of... He is constantly trying to lead him down the path that he needs him to go down.
Yeah, exactly.
And he just comes back to regulation and stuff like that fairly regularly, but without making that super overt, which I'm not sure why. I could be because he does know about Alex and doesn't want to bring up regulation, or it could just, I'm not sure. I don't know. But anyway, in this next clip, he brings up what happened after the Great Depression, which is an important point.
I think our mantra should be, not a penny more until we have a PCORA investigation started. PCORA was the guy, experienced prosecutor, that we brought in the Great Depression to say, find out the facts. And the Wall Street fat cats hated him, detested him, fought him every step of the way. But he found the fact. He found the widespread fraud, and it led to many of the statutory changes that for 50 years worked so successfully in America.
What happened
until
after
Wall Street, you know, finally got enough political juice to get rid of the laws in right near the end of the Clinton administration?
So he's bringing up the Pecora investigation.
Yeah.
Which, it was a very interesting period right after the Great Depression where Pecora was bringing in these, like, bank heads and just fucking dunking on them in court and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Embarrassing them to the point where they had to resign and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's disappointing that what was the name of the bootlegging movie with Sean Connery and, Kevin Costner? Do you remember that one?
Not off the top of my head.
Ah, God damn it. I would have loved instead of that, cause that was about, the FBI, like, breaking up bootleggers and
that. Yeah, the Unforgiven? Untouchables?
Untouchables, yeah. Like, that movie should have been about the Pecora investigation, and it just didn't have enough action.
I don't know if there's any gunplay.
That's the problem. Yeah. Man, if we just wrote, like, that was pretty much what the other guys tried to do. Will Ferrell.
Sure.
They've tried to make the Pecora investigation a buddy cop movie.
Perhaps.
It's
an interesting way to look at that.
It's a good movie.
Fine. The thing is that's interesting to me about this is that, like, the system worked well enough in the aftermath of the Great Depression that the conclusion of the report of the Pecora investigation, if you actually go back and read it, it talks about how, like, you know, it lays out all the causes of financial misdealings, games that were being played by banks and lenders and stuff like that. And then it explains, like, we don't really have recommendations because they have already been taken care of over the course of this investigation.
Right.
Because by the time the investigation ended, Glass-Steagall had already passed,
yep,
along with other banking reform bills and stuff like that. So the system even worked better then, because during the investigation, people were like, we're starting to learn stuff. We better fix it before we're told to.
I don't understand.
It's just another symptom of how broken things are now.
So this guy was finding these problems, and then when they found the problems, they were like, oh, let's do something about these problems, instead of being like, whoa. What if we just rode out the investigation,
mm-hmm,
and just saw where it landed and saw maybe – I wonder if we could
get a lot of money out of this.
I wonder if we could influence public opinion so that the investigation itself wouldn't even have mattered. Mm-hmm. I bet we could wring another few years of as much money out of this as possible.
Yeah.
And, Trump was elected.
Yeah.
Fuck.
It's very interesting. But again, the important thing to remember is that when the Pecora thing came to a head and when the SNL crisis was dealt with – all of it was about regulation and re-regulation of markets that had fallen into negative patterns. So for Alex to be having this guy on who's sort of like bread and butter and everything that he's advocated for kind of comes down to regulating markets,
mm-hmm,
it doesn't seem like that's something that Alex should be into. But he is an expert, and thus Alex needs him to sign off on this idea that the collapse and the crisis that happened in 2008 was planned. That's important for Alex.
Okay.
So in this next clip, he tries to lead him down that road, and we'll see how Black responds.
You're saying that, I mean, just on record, that the people that remove these laws, because I remember seeing Senator Dornan and others say this was going to happen on the floor, but, you know, he was against it. They knew from setting it up, from running it up to running it down, they fully knew, and this was premeditated.
No, I'm not saying that. I don't know that Congress knows. I'm telling you that in the trade, everybody knew that if you made something called a liar's loan, it was because they were frauds overwhelmingly, and that it was going to produce a disaster. Now, Congress, of course, is paid not to know, right? The bankers don't go in front of Congress and say, hi, we want to produce a disaster. Please take our money. They tell Congress, hey, we have this wonderful new thing, financial derivatives. And everybody, which is to say us, you know, on Wall Street, says this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? And everything's going to be wonderful, and we need it because unless we have it, we can't compete with the German massive, what are called universal banks that can do anything. So we have to get rid of every protection we've ever put in place in the United States so that our big banks can compete with their giant banks. That's how they sold it to Congress.
So that's a little bit against Alex's narrative, but it also is more real. That's a tough thing to yell. That's the problem for Alex.
That is a tough thing to yell.
And then he doesn't get to demonize the,
and I've
tried. The politicians and stuff like that. When it's easy to demonize them as just being willfully complicit.
Bought and paid for?
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they intended for a collapse to happen just because they looked the other way. Maybe some people had misgivings about looking the other way. Maybe had a suspicion that something bad could happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course no one was like, hey, we're going to fucking destroy everything. Of course not. And having him on there, it's really interesting to see this. Like, it's that was definitely an attempt on Alex's part to get that soundbite he needed. Mm-hmm. Him signing off on the idea of it being intentional. But because Black knows things and understands things, he's like, well, on the part of the people committing the frauds on Wall Street, yes, it's intentional.
Yeah.
But there's more nuance to it, and Alex is not interested in that. So it doesn't get hostile, and they end the interview, they go their separate ways. And then Alex gets back to complaining about the Pittsburgh shooting and him being attached to it, which seems to be very touchy subject for him.
It sure seems like he's attaching himself to it, even if he wasn't attached to it before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if people were just saying, like, oh, he's attached to it, he could have just not said anything. But now that he's like, oh, they're attaching me to it, I'm going to talk about it all the time.
But see, here's the thing that you fail to understand here. He's only doing that because the media is pulling a psyop on him, and he needs to fight back against that psyop, as he explains in this next clip.
I get newspapers attacking me because I'm calling for not having violence. The establishment is bold. They say, you want to murder cops. And I go, I just said we don't want this to happen. And they go, no, you want to murder cops. You cause cops to be murdered. And I'm going, the bankers are engineering a collapse. They're going to go after the people's guns. They've introduced the bills. It's going to be a bloodbath. We don't want violence. And they say, you know what? You're a cop killer. See, I mean, it's like, this is psychological warfare. They mean it to be crazy. They mean it to be wild. You know, why have they come out in the case of one Al-Qaeda member and claimed he's been killed over 15 times and never retract the last time he was killed? Why do they do that? They never say he wasn't killed last time. Chemical Ali, they claimed they killed him 4 times. Now they're saying they're going to execute him or something.
Or something. So I don't know who that Al-Qaeda member who's been killed 15 times is, because he doesn't use any specifics, but he does talk about Chemical Ali. Chemical Ali was the name given to Ali Hassan al-Majid, who is the cousin of Saddam Hussein, and also a guy who authorized indiscriminate use of chemical weapons on the Kurds in an attempt at genocide. On June 24th, 2007, he was found guilty of crimes against humanity and sentenced to death. However, his execution was postponed, and the then president of Iraq was hesitant to sign the execution order over political reasons. This was allegedly all cleared up on February 2008. Chemical Ali was also sentenced to death on December 2nd, 2008, in a separate trial, this time for, quote, playing a role in the killing of between 20,000 and 100,000 Shiite Muslims during the revolt in southern Iraq that followed the 1991 Persian Gulf War. He was also sentenced to death a third time on March 2, 2009, this time for the assassination of Grand Ayatollah Muhammad al-Sadr. He's also been he's just been sentenced to death a bunch of times.
For all of his crimes.
Right,
that
in separate trials.
That all individually deserve death penalties. It's not like he's been sentenced to death a bunch. Like, you don't need to retract it because he was sentenced to death.
This is almost certainly what Alex is confused about.
Yeah.
But because he's an idiot and he can't read, instead of getting to the bottom of where his confusion stems from, Alex insists he's right about everything, and any deviation from that is proof of a media psyop. It's pathetically childish behavior. Chemical Ali was executed on January something 2010. I can't remember the exact date, but that's the time that he died. All the other times are Alex just misunderstanding different trials that he had over the course of 2 years or so. It's real stupid.
Does he think
it's real fucking stupid?
I think he kind of thinks that if you get sentenced to death, like, you walk out of the courtroom and then you are
bullet.
Hung.
Bullet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
I don't know. In the interest of total fairness, though, I should point out that there was a rumor that Chemical Ali was killed in Basra on April 6, 2003, but it was only that, a rumor. It wasn't reported as his death.
Right.
So that's the only thing I could think of, but that's still only one. He said four times. It's very clear he's talking about the four times he was sentenced to death.
Absolutely.
So this is sad, man. That's sad.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's weak.
Yeah. So in this next clip, Alex has a breakdown about how he feels like a victim.
I mean, folks, we're total criminals run everything. We are screwed. And if we don't realize how bad it is, we have no hope of getting out of this. The house has caved in on us. You know, we're pinned, we're bleeding, and the American people are going, oh, it's a little cramped, but I'm like in the rubble with them going, listen, this is really bad. We got to work together to dig out of here. And, you know, and they're like, shut up, conspiracy theorist. Hold on, let me pull this 2x4 with nails out of my back.
This is a weird metaphor.
We're caved in here, and I'm saying, let's dig our way out. And then people are arguing, going, I don't know. The ceiling's supposed to be 6 inches from the floor.
I don't know who's who.
And there's
in this
those
metaphor.
Of us that have been trying to hold the house up. You know, we're down here in the mine, like the song Big John.
Now it's a mine?
And we're sitting there trying to hold this thing up together, and then and the public's punching us in the stomach and chest going, stop it, conspiracy theorists! Stop being anti-government! You're evil! There's no New World Order! There's no
Are
global
they in the
bank.
House or the
Everything's
mine?
Everything's fine! Shut up! There's no one-child policy and no carbon tax! And they're just punching us. We're going, please, stop! I'm trying, you know, they're just punching
please.
Us. I'm going, please! We're trying to hold up things, you know, and they're just bam, 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 and they're just like punching us as fast as they can.
This
we're
is going
please,
on a
please,
while.
Please, we can't hold it much longer! My God, they're building FEMA camps! Shut up, liar! The government loves me! Shut up! And they're just punching. And we're going, please, please, please stop punching. It's, no, the government's good. Government loves me. And just punching.
Damn it, you stole my screenplay.
The cops are reading MIAC reports and pulling Ron Paul supporters over. Get out of the car. And, of course, then they're starting to buy guns.
Where are they in the
house?
They're
going to go, whoa, we're going to have to fight.
They're in the mine.
Do you see
how
this is a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Is that what that was?
You understand White this is real? Tyranny's come to our shores? Bondage is coming. And no, you don't understand that. You're arrogant. You like your petty power in government. And the yuppies think everything's fine. And you have no idea how bad this is going to get.
Because you haven't been in the mine.
That's prophetic. That was a protracted metaphor that he gave, and I agree, it's convoluted as hell. But what he's just trying to say is we're good guys trying to help everybody, and everybody's punching me in the stomach, metaphorically. Stupid. I can't believe that he imagines that he is a force for good, but I can see that delusion. But the idea that he in his house-slash-mine metaphor, he's like, please stop putting... Like, the idea that he thinks he's doing this politely is very bizarre. But you should have heard there at the end, he says... can't you tell this is a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Yeah. That's what confused me the most.
Well, that's because he's talking about the Pittsburgh shooting. The Pittsburgh shooting happening is a self-fulfilling prophecy because of what all of these gun grabbers are doing. So, again, he's trying to justify the actions of this guy who killed cops and at the same time complaining about people who are saying that he's advocating for this.
Yeah.
It's very strange to me, and it also sort of paints the picture that he sees himself as the true victim of that crime.
Yeah.
It is on brand. It's certainly on brand for Alex, but.
So you guys are going to be mad at me? You guys are going to be mad at me? This is your fault for putting out that MIAC report, reporting on people who will do things like this guy. It's not my fault for sensationalizing that MIAC report, making guys who are in that MIAC report feel safe.
Reinforcing their paranoid worldview.
And then saying that they should be fighting against you because the MIAC report's conclusions are correct based upon your behaviors that wouldn't have existed if you hadn't put out the MIAC report in the first place. So who's really at fault here is...
Soros.
Is he Soros? Is
doesn't,
it Soros?
Doesn't say.
Oh,
doesn't
is it Soros?
Say. Doesn't bring him up in terms of all... He's on an unhinged rant here about the very things that he was complaining about Soros about previously just a couple days ago. I don't fucking understand what's going on here. Somali pirates, Soros is missing. I don't know what's going on anymore. 2009's a mystery.
2009 is a mystery.
So,
what are we, in April?
Yeah.
Jesus, how many narratives have we gone through?
So many.
It's insane.
But in order to keep our bearings about us, we've got to get to something concrete. Something.
We got to call the Somali pirates. They know how to keep bearings.
Bring. So we've got to get our hold of something real. Something that actually exists. Like we're Desmond on Lost. We need to find our constant.
Yes, there it is.
We need to find
there
some,
it is. Yeah. I was waiting for the Lost reference.
So I find my constant in Alex bringing up an actual thing that I can look into. And in this case, it turns out to be a document put out by the Council on Foreign Relations.
You know, no one's ever wanted to rule the world. There aren't global elites. The Council on Foreign Relations, in literally hundreds of documents just in the last few years, you know, hasn't called for global governance. I mean, they actually have, but international institutions and global governance program, World Order 21st Century, May 1st, 2008, with David Rockefeller saying they're going to engineer a planetary takeover by the UN, by a world depression. I mean, that doesn't exist, sir. And if you think it exists, if you think the CFR exists, well, then you're an orange monkey wearing a tinfoil hat. That's all I can really say.
That's a reference to one of his sponsors, Home Gain. They have a mascot, the Home Gain Gorilla. He was just doing a plug for them where he was playing with a plush gorilla toy. And he was like, let's get a tinfoil hat for it. So he's even doing a little product plug there at the end. Subtle.
Home Gain is a...
It's a place where you can put in your home address and they'll give you a estimated value you could get for it. And then they have like a...
Oh!
It's a scam.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a scam.
I didn't understand the...
We talked about them in the past. They're a very unscrupulous business.
Nah.
But this document that Alex is talking about, the International Institutions and Global Governments Governance Program from the Council on Foreign Relations, that is a document that was released on May 1st, 2008 and has what appears to be a very scary title for someone like Alex. If you actually read the document, the first thing that jumps out to you is that in the first paragraph, they literally say that the program is funded by a grant from the Rubina Foundation, an organization I have literally never heard Alex bring up. That seems strange. Also, it specifies who's running this program, who's in charge of ushering it through. It's not David Rockefeller. David Rockefeller's not involved in this report at all. His name does come up, but only as like some foundation with his name on it, being like an attaché.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's personally involved in this. As is always the case, Alex doesn't understand what this a document is about. But he relies on being able to create fear out of a title that includes words like global governance. In reality, what that refers to here is not so much the creation of a world government, but the idea of managing an approach to issues that aren't isolated to one country or region. As the document explains, quote, the program will take an issue area approach, focusing on arrangements governing state conduct and international cooperation in meeting four broad sets of challenges. One, countering transnational threats, including terrorism, proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, and infectious diseases. Two, protecting the environment and promoting energy security. Three, managing the global economy. And four, preventing and responding to violent conflict. They go on to explain that there's a variety of approaches that they are studying. Quote, in each of these spheres, the program will consider whether the most promising framework for governance is a formal organization with universal membership, e.g. the United Nations, a regional or sub-regional organization, or a narrower informal coalition of like-minded countries, or some combination of all three. A narrower informal coalition of like-minded countries is basically a description of alliances. This is saying that it's possible that in some instances, an organization like the UN might be best equipped to respond to a crisis. But in others, perhaps just countries on the same page would be best. That seems counter to the idea that this document is about establishing a one-world government. If you read the whole thing, it's about global cooperation, not global government. Governance is the word they chose to use, which sounds similar to government but doesn't mean the same thing.
Man, we got to figure out how to get these guys to understand what words are going to turn into what.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably a lot of people don't understand what people with bad will
right?
do.
Right? Like, we could have talked to those Club of Rome guys and got them to just call it the, like, Happy Fun Time Hour, and it would have been fine. Like, all their advice is good shit.
I think that they had, like, one sentence they fucked up in one book, one of their publications that just led to everything spinning out of control.
Yeah, probably.
I can't believe how flimsy that shit is. But yeah, I mean, what you see
No,
there...
what they're describing is, hey, guess what? The world is interconnected now. You thought that you could just be a place by yourself, but it turns out that if there's an earthquake in Tokyo, that can affect your shit.
Yep.
So how are we going to deal with all of this shit that affects all of us the best way? And is it going to be through everybody voting? Is it going to be through us in Mexico being like, let's fix this fucking canyon or all of that shit? It's what are the best ways to deal with problems that aren't just yours?
100%.
Yeah.
And the report is very specific about this program being about studying these problems and the approaches that can be taken to them with a broad spectrum. There are multiple paradigms, I guess, of organization that are being looked at, which does imply the possibility that just a country responding itself
is great
could be the right thing in many instances.
Yeah.
This is not at all advocating global government.
Right.
There's nothing to do with what Alex is saying. But
and
again,
in many
the title,
instances, it would actually be advocating against global government
that's
because
what's implied
that
by
would
that.
Be yep. too slow.
100%.
Exactly.
So, I mean, like, he says that there's hundreds or thousands of reports that the CFR has put out and stuff like that. And, I mean, whatever. I don't care. That's the one you specifically chose, and it doesn't yeah. say what you say it says. So I don't know what to do with that. It's just the same thing he does with news stories,
yeah.
just the title instead of headline.
Read the headline, and yeah.
It's kind of weak. So we have one more clip here, and the reason that we're going to end with this is it's a nice coda to everything. I wish it called back the Smalley Pirates, but unfortunately.
That would have been great.
Nah, that's done for the day. So William Black was on. He was a very reputable source. He was a measured, informed person who ended up becoming the economic advisor for Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
Which is just, I can't get over the humor of that. As him being in Alex's documentary, but we'll leave that aside for now. Alex responded to him as someone who was trying to lead down paths and then, just sort of gain credibility to his arguments by attaching them to William Black.
Yeah.
Now his callers and his listeners maybe don't agree with that perspective.
Let's just go to your phone calls right now as promised. Joe in New Mexico, sir, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Alex. I'm getting kind of frustrated here, and I was listening to that William Black interview with you, and I watched his Moyers. People got to go back and watch the third segment on that. This guy he's holding back. You know, you are a truth seeker. This guy's, in my opinion, he's pulling a Glenn Beck.
So.
He's pulling a Glenn Beck.
This is what happens when you internalize narratives like Alex Jones's. What you do is you exclude people with actual expertise on issues. And because they don't fall exactly in line with Alex's ideas about the Federal Reserve and that everybody crashed the economy on purpose, they are now Glenn Becks. They're controlled opposition. When in reality, they're telling a studied approach to what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you poison the well in more ways than one. Like, you ruin your own ability to look at the world really. And then you also create, I don't know if you call it an oppositional defiance, but you create a hostility towards people who know things who don't agree with you.
Yeah.
You have a built-in excuse for why the world doesn't conform to your expectations of them. And that's super dangerous.
It always has the same endpoint, which is cannibalization. Anytime these kinds of situations occur, right? So with this fucking guy, we get rid of all of the liberals. But then it's just us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have an enemy to
hate.
Then
it's
but
the mainstream
then some
GOP
guy,
versus libertarians.
And then some guy says that. So we got to get rid of all of those guys. And now it's just us. And we don't have anybody to hate. Well, that guy disagreed with me about this. So now it's only these guys versus these guys
yeah.
who are left in the libertarian movement. None of it means anything because all that exists for them is the desire to get rid of people,
yeah.
not to create anything
or
to grow.
And from that perspective, that, like, even if you take away the merits and just like it being the right and just thing to do, like in terms of like social inclusion and
yeah.
stuff like that, That alone is enough of an argument to be like a damning indictment of just a mentality of exclusion.
Yeah.
Like it always will end up, become like it's a piece of paper that's folded over and
exactly.
then it gets folded again.
Yeah, yeah. All right. We're a white nation. We got rid of all the black people and all the brown people and
let's
it's just
let's get back
us.
To hating Catholics.
Now it's Catholics. We hate
right.
Catholics. All right. We got rid of all the Catholics. Now it's Irish. Now we got rid of all the Irish. Now it's, but you're never going to end.
It's a fractal. Always, I agree with that. And, on an intellectual level, that's what his callers manifest because of the
exactly.
brain worm that Alex has introduced to them.
Right.
So that's sad. Although, god damn it, did I enjoy the idea that he likes Smalley Pirates.
Man, why?
It's bananas.
Why?
I'm more.
Why pick Smalley Pirates?
It's weird. It's a strange place to stake your claim and plant your flag, but. I respect it on some levels. And honestly, I think on
hey, you gotta give it up to the Somali pirates for inspiring it too.
You gotta give it up to the Somali pirate apologists in the world like Alex Jones. What the fuck? In many ways, this
it's tough to, you know what? That's where we've gotten away from our roots, which is apologizing for Somalis.
In many ways, I find this more interesting than, the Soros, lambasting.
Yeah.
I think because that is a story that needs to play out further.
What, the Somali pirate?
No, the Soros stuff. This, it's like, there's nothing I need to know more. Like, that to me is a juicy Alex Jones fuck up.
It is nice that we have, by virtue of the show that we do and who we cover, unlike scripted shows where it's like, oh, for, you know, for like Breaking Bad, whenever they have an episode that's set entirely, bottle episode, you know, they do that because of budget constraints. But for us, it's like, Alex just gave us a bottle episode where he decided Somali pirates are great.
Yeah.
We've got a larger narrative. We're going to get back to it. But for today, pirates are great.
No, because it is even like that bottle episode because they're still dealing meth and like the entire plot of the show is still going on.
Yeah.
So Alex being mad about the Pittsburgh shooting stuff, that's sort of the dealing
there.
Meth part of it. And then the fly is Somali
pirates.
Support. The fuck? Anyway, we'll see how that plays out. I'm very excited about 2009 again.
Yeah.
I have been reborn in 2009. Gotta give it to him.
Gotta give it to the Somali pirates.
What a dick.
I did not think I would ever hear that sentence in my life, Dan.
It's weird. Very weird. But you gotta give it to us because we have a website.
We do have a website. And we have stolen nobody's domains.
That's true. I have squatted on a couple for comedic effect.
That's true.
Like, I don't want to get into it.
Do we still have Fill Your Hand?
I think we do.
I think we do.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Fillyourhand.com.
Feel free to go to fillyourhand.com, click the support the show button, or I don't know, I guess Fill Your Hand.
Yep. You can go check us out on Twitter at @knowledge_fight.
Indeed. You can find us on Facebook.
Also, I just remembered that someone sent me a message on my personal Twitter, and I forgot to check. I saw like a notification, but I didn't check it, and I apologize. I will get back to you. I never use my personal Twitter. And I'm probably going to just get rid of it because I haven't used it in forever.
Yeah.
But I don't want that person to think that I'm ignoring them. I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
I just felt very self-conscious about that.
You can also join a group. It's called Go Home and Tell Your Mother You're a Somali Pirate.
That's right.
Yep. That's a good one. You got to give it up to us for naming it
That's true. We're also on iTunes where you can rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. I should tell you, Jordan, I don't know if you know this.
What?
I recently checked in on our reviews,
mm-hmm.
and there are a bunch of them that say, not since Bill Cooper has anyone taken down Alex Jones. There are a bunch. So thank you to everybody
who
followed through with
that's
that joke.
That's very funny.
Yeah. We'll be back. I'll say that, I don't know, William Black doesn't seem like he's ever killed anybody. He just seems to have given good
financial
markets and helped to re-regulate the savings and loan industry. He seems like a pretty good guy. He's never killed anybody. But he's in a documentary with a guy who has technically probably killed a guy.
Who's that?
That's Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.